ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, The Characteristics of King Dranjana, text number 53. Nirchinnama paschadras.
Nirchinnama paschadras.
Tayayati paranjana.
Tayayati paranjana.
Vaisasam nama vishayam.
Vaisasam nama vishayam.
Lutakina samanvita.
Lutakina samanvita.
Nirtina paschadras.
Nirtina paschadras.
Tayayati paranjana.
Tayayati paranjana.
Vaisasam nama vishayam. Niriti, of the name Niriti.
Of the name Niriti.
Nama,
ko,
paschat,
western,
dva,
garret,
kaya, by which, yati, used to go, paranjana, king paranjana. Vaishasam, of the name Vaishasa.
Nama,
ko,
Vishayam,
to the place.
To the place.
Lubdhakena, by the friend named Lubdhaka.
By a friend named Lubdhaka.
Samanvita,
accompanied.
Translation. Another gate. On the western side was known as Niriti. Puranjana used to go through this gate to the place known as Vaisasa, accompanied by his friend Lutaka. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is a reference to the rectum. The rectum is supposed to be situated on the western side of the eyes, nose and ears. This gate is especially meant for death. When an ordinary living entity abandons its present body, it passes through the rectum. It is therefore painful. When one is called by nature to evacuate, one also experiences pain. The friend of the living entity who accompanies him through this gate is named Lubdhaka, which means greed. Due to our greed, we eat unnecessarily, and such a gluttony causes pain at the time of evacuation. The conclusion is that the living entity feels well if he evacuates properly. This gate is known as Niriti, or the painful gate. So, we're discussing the characteristics of King Puranjana. Of course, King Puranjana is an analogy form of a story representing each and every living entity in this world. We are an embodied spirit soul embodied in this material body. So that is Harunjana. And this material body has nine gates, the two eyes, nostrils, mouth, ears, genitals and rectus. And the spirit soul within the body is said to go through these different gates to enjoy the senses, for the senses to enjoy different experiences in relationship to sense objects by going through these gates where the senses are situated. So, referring to the rectum, is the actual gate, so nine holes in the body, like gates. There sits the actual subtle senses. The senses are very subtle. They sit there and they can operate within and without these gates. So the subtle sense of evacuation. The senses themselves are very subtle. Just like we call a tree is called ekapada. It has different names. One is ekapada, which means that a tree is a one-legged species. So, therefore, the subtle senses of the living entities, all the senses are there in all living entities, but they're subtle. So a tree has the subtle senses of the legs, the movement, except they're, by punishment, they're not allowed to move. So that's a suffering condition. And so just like a prisoner. A prisoner may have, their full use of their senses, but they may be locked in a cell, so small sometimes, it's like prisoners of war, so small they can't stretch their arms, they can't stretch their legs. Okay. So the senses are there, but they can't use them. But just because they can't use them doesn't mean the senses are not there. So the senses are subtle. So, and this luddhika, or the subtle sense, is, in the analogy, is compared to greed. So when the living entity desires to go, or is forced, sometimes by force to use the rectum, one is accompanied by the subtle sense, and this gate is called nirriti because it is a gateway to a painful experience. And the subtle sense is compared to greed. So one is accompanied by, the pain is accompanied by one's greed. Through greed, one experiences pain through the living entity's experience through the rectum. So at death, here Prabhupada explains, at death, an ordinary living entity, when the soul leaves the body, we leave through the rectum. Now just the thought of that is painful to me. So, and therefore the yogis, they're coming ready to leave their body, they actually place their heel to block the rectum. So that's not possible. They make sure that the soul travels upwards. The last thing they want to do is to leave like that. Because of fear and uncontrolled mind and senses at the time of death in Sri Aurobindo. one's life, one experiences that. But also, you know, here, Prabhupada in the purport explains also that greed can be shown in the way that one eats uncontrollably. So when one eats uncontrollably, it causes a painful experience, which is experienced through, you know, evacuation. So sometimes, you know, I've seen some relatives, very elderly, who have you know, hemorrhoids or, you know, things like that, and throughout the day they'll eat voraciously, like gluttons. food that they don't need.
Very common.
Yeah, it's very common. I know, and they know, it's going to end in pain. Yeah.
Those who envy, it is seen they have got these complaints very often.
Mm.
Envy is
So that's one example there. Eating too much or eating the wrong foods. But even in a healthy condition, you know, basically we know that generally, if we're healthy, so we're traveling and we can't evacuate, it becomes a very pain. Yeah, very difficult for the elderly, young children, you know, practically everyone. You know, one of the things I know is about the city these days, you know, when you travel in the cities or anywhere, they don't have many public toilets. If you travel on the freeway and you get stuck in a traffic jam, you get stuck on top of the West Gate Bridge, and you need to go to the toilet to evacuate, and you could be there for 2 hours, that is painful. Even the fear of getting stuck there is painful. I know people who won't travel past, go down to the local shops, elderly, because of the fear of, you know, being in the car, wanting to go to the toilet, and it's just... So, even for healthy people, it's nitty. That's a pain. Or to speak of death. So, so the gate is called nitty, and it allows one to go to the place, the basis of pain. So it's called the painful gate. The gateway to pain. And Lupika represents the greed which exacerbates the problem. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, so, as you were talking, I asked Rasa yesterday, what's the verse? She said, text number 53, it's about the record, good luck.
Gateway to hell.
So, But anyway, you know, I was looking for a reference in the Bhagavad Gita, and actually we're supposed to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Yeah? We're supposed to talk about these things. People could talk, you know, as you, even from a medical perspective, people could save themselves a lot of pain if they talked about, you know, these things. Realistically. So, now, here we see that, you know, the last greed, anger. These are the you know, what accompanies the soul to go through these gates. But these three, lust, greed and anger, they are in fact the gateways to hell, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. But there is another path where all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. For that person, they live a purified existence and can rise above the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. So, in the 8th chapter of the, 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 8 to 12, there's this verse here, and this is the other path of keeping all the gates of the body illuminated with knowledge. Humility, pridelessness. So bear in mind that as we're discussing these qualities, these are considered to be the process of knowledge. So as we try to practice these qualities in our life, it facilitates coming to the position of knowledge. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So this cultivation of lust, greed and anger in one's activities is within the realm of ignorance.
Nivritti mar.
What's that?
Nivritti mar.
Yes. So, I'll look at this, what Srila Prabhupada describes, this principle of the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease. Srila Prabhupada says that one should try to understand the distress of accepting birth, death, old age and disease. There are descriptions in various Vedic literatures of birth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the world of the unborn, the child's stay in the womb of the mother, its suffering, etc., are all very graphically described. It should be thoroughly understood that birth is distressful. Because we forget how much distress we have suffered within the womb of the mother, we do not make any solution of the repetition of birth and death. Similarly, at the time of death, there are all kinds of sufferings, and they are also mentioned in the authoritative scriptures. These should be discussed. And as far as disease and old age are concerned, everyone gets practical experience. No one wants to be diseased, and no one wants to become old, but there is no avoiding these. Unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distress of birth, death, old age and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. So this, you know, these conversations, we remind ourselves on a regular basis. Whenever we whenever the material energy influences our mind, our intelligence, and we think, maybe I could enjoy in this material world. Whenever that thought comes, we have to remember these very simple, you know, points. You know, if we remember these very simple points, it's very easy to say, well, no, no possibility. But when we forget this, then we can just wander off with that thought, like King Paranjana, out through the gate of hell, and, you know, just end up leading to slaughter and pain. It's very, very important. And, you know, the interesting thing about this philosophy, so people say that, you know, the Gita, so that is your Hindu faith. Oh? So you don't have a rectum? Hindus don't have rectums. they don't experience pain. So, you know, people say, I'm not interested in religion. Where's the religion? You eat too much, you suffer pain. You have to die, you suffer pain. However, sometimes when people mention the word religion, because they have this concept, crazy concept of what religion is, you say, this is not religion. This is science. Take it like that. Of course, it is a religion, but not as they're thinking, that I can just pick a religion which allows me to do any damn thing I want in this world and justify it. If that's their religion, no, this is not a religion. If you, a person, wants to understand the soul's eternal relationship with the Supreme Soul and abide by the orders of God, yes, it's a religion. So, now here also, another interesting one here. Now, as for detachment from children, wife and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. So, you know, one may consider that because devotees talk about very serious matters such as death and birth. Therefore, when it comes to family life, they're heartless. They're like stones. They don't care. You know, they don't invest in themselves. That is bogus. It's nonsense. Prabhupada says here very clearly, you know, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. Children, wife and home, they are natural objects of affection. That's not our philosophy. That's not our practice. We shouldn't practice that, and we shouldn't be labelled like that. he says that, but when they are not favourable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. So, if something is going to cause one to take repeated birth and death, and destroy one's ability to save others from repeated birth and death, if one takes that type of association, it's very detrimental to that process. One should not be attached to them. Why should anyone, you know, why should we be attached to something that will bring about our death again and again? As a natural cause, anything that will cause us death, now or in the future, we avoid. So, we see here that Prabhupada mentions even later on that Arjun had to come to this position where the attachment to the family relationships was actually detrimental not only to Arjun's spiritual position, but to the entire society. And so he actually had to, in that battle of Kurukshetra, kill them all. Just a total detachment in a battle of war. Powerful as it sometimes has to be, that it comes to life and death. But that's how one should see it. So, but he says the best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy. Because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. So actually, there's no reason that anyone can't live happily in this world, in family life, in Krishna consciousness, because it's very easy. And Prabhupada described, how easy is it? He says, one need only chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Except the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. What's the difficulty? Have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, as we're doing now. And engage oneself in deity worship. These four things will make one happy. One should train the members of his family in this way. The family members can sit down morning and evening and chant together Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one can mould his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness, following these four principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. But if it is not congenial, not favourable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize or serve Krishna just as Arjun did. Oh, this is the Bhagavad Gita. Arjun did not want to kill his family members, but when he understood these family members were impediments to his Krishna realization, he accepted the instruction of Krishna and fought and killed them. In all cases, one should be detached from the happiness and distress of family life, because in this world one can never be fully happy or fully miserable. So, you know, that statement there at the end is also very significant. That Prabhupada is saying, there's no reason why anyone can't live happily in family life by introducing those four principles of Krishna consciousness. So everyone can do that very easy. Anyone around the world can do that. And yet, he says in all circumstances, one should be detached from the happiness and distress of family life. Nonetheless, even in the Krishna conscious family life, one should be detached. So, you know, that's an interesting concept, that one is living happily with one's family in Krishna consciousness. But because we're practicing spiritual life in the material world, as long as we have a material body, there is happiness and distress. So, for instance, as we said, even if you're eating prasadam, if you get stuck on top of the West Gate Bridge and you need to go to the toilet, you're still in the same problem. Isn't it?
Yes.
So, you know, there are certain happinesses and distresses which are, you know, we cannot avoid as long as we have a material body. When we're spiritual life, material, we can make the best use of a bad bargain. But still, even living happily in Krishna consciousness with family, or you know, without family, like the brahmacharis and sannyas, etc., one should always be detached from the happiness and distress associated with our circumstances in life. So, now, that concept is explained in the fifth chapter, verse number 3. Krishna says, one who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated by mighty armed Arjuna. So, as long as we, if we become attached, if we're living happily in family life, in Krishna consciousness, or even in the renounced world of Krishna consciousness, we have to be detached from the happiness and distress, and that detachment comes when we're not attached to the results of our activities. When a devotee, in any circumstances, that they are performing their activities either in family life or out of family life, just for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, in pure devotional service, without any proprietorship over the results, any sense of, you know, false identity as the body, the controller, the enjoyer, all of that gone, that person can rise above the happiness and distress. In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna considered that the results of my activities here on this battle of Kurukshetra, those results are mine. And therefore, he suffered distress. But as soon as Arjuna understood, actually, Krishna, who is time personified, who is giving the due destiny according to the good and bad deeds and intentions of all the people on that battlefield, and who had personally come to, you know, not only do that, but to liberate them and give them a far greater destiny than they deserve, Arjuna understood the result is his, because each and every living entity on that battlefield is a spirit soul who's actually part and parcel of the Lord's energy. Each and every one of us has the independence that we can be situated in a natural position as the part to serve the whole. Or we can rebel against that and say, although I'm the part, I want to behave like the Supreme Controller. So, but actually the natural position of the spirit soul is that they are part and parcel of the Lord's own energy. In fact, they are existing within Krishna, and that energy of the Lord is not different from the Lord himself.
The same difference between trying to swim upstream or swimming downstream.
That's right. So, when Arjuna understood that actually every living entity on this battlefield is actually Krishna's, they're Krishna's. That every living entity, both the material bodies and their spiritual forms, they actually, those senses belong to Hrishikesh, the proprietor of all senses. So, the result of their activities is Krishna. He is the proprietor of everything. Everything that we see in material spiritual creation is the property of Krishna, because it is manifested by His energy. And because everything within creation is God's property, He is the natural enjoyer of the results of His own energies. Arjuna was thinking, here I am, the results of this situation should be for my pleasure, and therefore he immediately suffered distress. When he understood that actually the results, that I am not entitled to the fruits of my action, but I do have the eternal right to always serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he understood that, then he rose above that platform of happiness and distress, good and bad, all the dualities. Immediately he came to that platform, all the dualities that were plaguing him disappeared. So actually serving Krishna on the spiritual platform, one immediately rises above all the dualities. That doesn't mean that, for instance, Arjuna, he still had to fight that battle. His son was killed in that battle. You know, he was shot at by arrows. So much difficulty in those 18 days. Imagine going 18 days. How many people? There's 6 million, you know, 6 million, 6 million, 64 million, something like that. 18 days, and minimum, there's about 6 million people all slaughtered on that battlefield. I don't think I'd ever want to live through that. Especially in the position of Arjuna, where many of those people were actually persons who should have been having an affectionate relationship with him, who had become his avowed enemies, or fought with his avowed enemies. A very difficult position. But actually, because he came to the transcendental position, as a spirit soul, he only experienced the happiness and distress of the material aspect was insignificant. But the spiritual aspect of his loving, eternal loving relationship with the personality of Godhead, who's looking after the welfare of all living entities eternally, was unlimited. So, therefore, Prabhupada says that, look, in family life, we should be detached from the happiness and distress. And the only way one can be detached from the happiness and distress in family life, or in the renounced order of life, or in brahmachari life, is not to be attached to the results of our activities, but the results of our activities with our senses should be dedicated to the pleasure of the Supreme, and then immediately we rise above the platform of happiness. That is the only way we can be detached. So therefore, you know, in this verse here, there's a couple of points that Prabhupada points out which are the most important aspect of these. We went through these items of knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada says, he says, of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. If one does not approach, or is not able to approach, the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. So that's the other benefit of engaging in Krishna consciousness. That to enable all the gates of the body to be illuminated by knowledge automatically develop. So, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasati Bhakti Bhagavati Kinchinasa Vedvanais Tatra Samasati Shara. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who is attaining the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. So there, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that we must take to devotional service. That is, all the items of knowledge culminate when we understand the Supreme Lord, our eternal relationship with Him, that we are an eternal spirit soul meant to serve the Lord, and that is our eternal blissful position. All knowledge should come to that point. If it doesn't, other items of knowledge won't develop or be useless. But to take the devotional service, one must accept the bona fide spiritual master. That is actually the first item of devotional service. That one must hear, learn the science of bhakti from someone who is a professor or an acharya in the science of bhakti. We cannot learn any science from someone who does not know that science. The spiritual science is the most difficult science to understand. It must be learned from the spiritual master, who is well practiced in that. Then, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. Now, a little further on, Srila Prabhupada explains the benefits of approaching a spiritual master. He says that, as for acceptance of the spiritual master, that is essential, because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in the spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regulative principles. Or the regulative principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. So here we've discussed in this topic, in this verse, that we can either illuminate all the gates of the body with knowledge through the process mentioned, especially accepting a bona fide spiritual master, practicing bhakti yoga, by which all the qualities and the processes of knowledge are fulfilled. Or we can follow the path of ignorance, epitomized by lust, greed, and anger, and experience pain, death, birth, death, old age, and disease. All right, hands up. Who's the last three danger? Oh, it's just me.
Unfortunately.
Who's taking the path of knowledge? Jai. Surprisingly enough, very few people, although it seems common sense, there's very few people who agree with this.
Which part?
Everything. Everything. They're going to continue to enjoy gluttony, greed, pride, so many things. That is what we see going on in the world. That is what we see everywhere. That is what people are doing. There are very few people who actually will just, that's very common sense. Very few people actually take that message.
Since I watch you suffer.
So even I suffer, even I suffer. Prabhupada describes, you know, the materialist, you know, mentality, which I know very well, that it's a dog's obstinacy. He tells this story, that there were, that one time a crow landed on a fruit tree, and as it landed, one of the fruits fell. At the same time, there was someone there, near the branch, who was actually collecting fruits from the tree. So one man said to the other, "Oh, did you see that? As the crow landed, the fruit fell." The other person said, "Don't be silly. As the crow landed, he cut the fruit with the scissors, and that's why it fell." "No, no, no, don't say that. It's obvious. But as, you know, as the crow landed, that's when the fruit..." "No, no, no, it was the scissors." They went on like this for a while. They were friends. And then one of them said, "You say the scissors one more time, I'm going to grab you around the scruff of the neck and I'll throw you in this river and drown you." "What's the scissors?" "Right." Grabs him, puts him in the river, ducks his head in. "What is it?" "Scissors." Like that. So he practically almost drowned this person. He gets up on the bank. This person's in the river. He's sort of going down. And all of a sudden you see the hand come up out of the water. Prabhupada describes, that is the dog's obstinacy, you know, our attachment to, you know, material life, despite all good instruction. Anyway, I'll leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions about that topic.
Guru, it says that when the ordinary entity leaps and leaps through the direction, but that's going to hell, right?
Well, they'll go to their next body. They can go to their next body, or if they've been very sinful, they go out through the rectum and to hell before they take the next body. Usually, the hellish planets are for those whose sinful activities are so, you know, vast that they can't, you can't give them enough bodies to suffer that, so they really have to go to hell for some intensive therapy, you know, to burn up some of that karma. But, you imagine someone like Adolf Hitler, you know, you can't just, how many bodies would such a person have to take to endure the suffering he inflicted? To this generation, he's still suffering. That's his fault. So therefore, they go to a hellish place to burn up some of that. Then they take their bodies in hellish bodies.
I was thinking, only the most sinful ones
for the rest of it. No, just the ordinary person. The ordinary person, because, you know, the ordinary, you know, the average person in Kali Yuga, you know, can look forward to that.
I always considered my mother to be a very saintly person.
Yes.
And when she passed away, I saw her spirit go. I saw the colour change, just go, and went straight to the top of her head.
Right, that's good. Very nice. Yeah. Yeah, Srila Bhaktivedanta Kaur, the spiritual master of Param Guru Srila Prabhupada, he watched his grandfather and pass away. He was a yogi, and he saw that the soul left through the top of the sky. So apparently, sometimes it can be made known to others that that's when he left. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, because my father cursed and swore all his life, but I knew his heart. The last thing he said to my sisters before he passed away, when they were asking him what he was talking about, he just said, "It's beautiful," and he passed away.
That's good. That's good. Well, he definitely didn't go through the rectum then, because he wouldn't be described as a beautiful. So it's a good sign. Yeah. No, they're not ordinary people.
Prabhu, I have a question. You mentioned about the battle of Kurukshetra. This question mystifies me. I have asked it too many number of times. How does anyone, even including Krishna or Arjuna or anyone else, justify the killing of 6 million people? The battle was between the principles and say against the evils, or he stands for the position of two different clans, Pandavas and the Kauravas, basically. So, in that battle, how does one justify, including Krishna, a killing of 6 million people? Who were innocent and who were working for the two clans, or the two leaders of the two sides? Because they were actually not evil. They were all fighting to support, or they were literally working like soldiers on employment, most of them. And they had to face the killing.
I don't know that you could put that onto Krishna.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't know that you could put that on Krishna, because one takes up the life of such different Mitra was born. Chapshikan, but he chose to actually live the life of a Brahmana. If one chooses to live the life of a Chapshikan, know that by fighting according to religious principles on the battlefield, that they will go to heaven or attain liberation. They're looking forward to that death. To deprive them of that opportunity, that would be a disservice to their natural duty. To say that a police officer goes out, to protect citizens in dangerous situations and then gets killed, that's the government's fault. How would they allow that? They choose to become police officers. Why would we blame the government for their choice?
I'm sitting from dark, basically.
And even if we consider that both Krishna, Arjuna and many saintly persons tried to negotiate, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself tried to negotiate, let's not go to war. Now, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Dhritarashtra asked the question, when the Pandavas and the sons of Kuru assembled, what did they do? As Prabhupada says, they went there to fight. Why would he ask that question? Because he was fearful that they wouldn't fight. He wanted them. That is the leader, and they wanted to fight. But what was that question for?
No, it's not about the fort. I'm not even saying that, I'm extremely devotee of Krishna. The question which puzzles me is, Krishna knew everything, that so many people are going to die. And still he orchestrated that big master event of the battle of Kurukshetra.
Krishna?
Yeah. And what was the vision of a supreme master behind a killing of about, say, 6 million innocent people? What could be the vision? I'm just trying to contemplate that. It puzzles my mind quite often.
So, if we have a particular desire, then we cannot fulfill that unless God gives us the body to fulfill our particular desire, and creates the situation by which we can fulfill that desire. So Krishna facilitated the desire of those living entities, what they wanted to do. They wanted that situation. Krishna facilitated that. But if a living entity wants to follow the path of unnecessary violence and irreligiosity, as Duryodhana did, Krishna may facilitate that, but never at the expense of his devotees. And therefore, by Krishna's will, all those who took part would be not be victorious. That is Krishna's will. So we may have a particular desire that we will defy the laws of the material nature. So Krishna will give us a body where life after life we can make that attempt. But there's not one lifetime in which we ever defy the laws of nature. They went into battle to defy Krishna. Krishna gave them the same. We come into this body, we take the body, and this body, generally our desire is that we will come into this world and defy the personality of Godhead. He is saying he is enjoyer, and I'm saying I'm your competitor. This is my problem. I'm the Lord of all, I survive. So he will give us that facility. He'll actually facilitate that desire, but because it's an illusory position, it will never be a reality, and therefore we're always defeated. But actually, he's being very kind. Actually, Krishna was very kind that here are the living entities. I'm offering them the kingdom of God. They want to compete with me, fight with me, and rebel against me. And yet he's so kind, he will facilitate that and then make arrangements where they can be purified of that, envy of Krishna. He will make that arrangement. He sits detached. Same as, you know, when people go to, through the criminal justice department, they get punished, but they get punished in such a way as, you know, the hope is to take that, desire to destroy the government and destroy civil life and destroy the peaceful. You know, the punishment is there, but it's also, you know, a process to try and take that. And if they rehabilitate, the government says, welcome back to society. That's the kindness of the government. That is their kindness, to do both things. It is their kindness to all the free citizens. Why should the free citizens? Why should you and I live in a world where people running around want to rape their daughters? That's the government's kindness to us. Why should people, you know, whose very existence is centered around lust, greed and anger, and they have massive big armies, then Krishna removes that burden from the earth. That's his kindness to all living entities. Otherwise, for instance, if we say, had Adolf Hitler won the war, what would be our position? It's the Lord's kindness that he didn't. Are we angry? Are we angry at God that such persons are not running around, you know? Well, these people should be slaughtered. You know, that's his kindness to us, and it's his kindness to them. You know, all we have to understand is he's the Supreme Father. Everyone knows how a father acts with the children. They don't, you know, sometimes the children, you know, become the enemy of the father or the mother. Father never becomes the enemy of the children. They'll tolerate. Krishna is the Supreme Father. But he's the best father because he's God. There's no envy. Does someone think that God has envy or hatred towards? Why would God hate himself? Because the living entities, as we said, they are his own energy. Why would God hate himself? Do we hate our hand? That doesn't make sense. But someone would say, oh, God must have some, how can he justify his behavior? He didn't hate any part of his existence. Everything is Krishna. And he has no malice towards his own self. God is love. How is it even possible?
And you said, Krishna is the upholder of religion. And he is the Supreme Father. And he came to alleviate all the suffering. Yadaya Dhanus Planet Bhagavati Bharata. To avoid religion, he has to get this word so that all the nasty people have to be taken away.
Yeah. And actually, what Krishna showed us through his kindness, personally showed us that violence is the last resort. That's what we saw. When you go through the Mahabharata, you see that every possible attempt, even by Krishna, was made to avoid that battle.
He himself only messenger.
Now, when it says that it's God's plan, means that Krishna knows the heart of those, when we take birth in our bodies, it's considered that he understands the desires and the plans to act on those desires that are there within their heart. And it's the example given in the Gita that sometimes the air blows over a field of roses, and the air takes that subtle, flavor.
Aroma.
So subtle.
Sage.
Yeah? So when the soul associates with the mode of tamas, and there's anger, envy, Krishna, sitting within the heart, he can sense that subtle desire. He knows what that living entity has to do. And therefore, he has a plan for it. But his plan encompasses everyone, for everyone's benefit. Time. Should Prabhupada keep you just?
No.